Okay, here we go. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course, the Friday night show that I hopefully you're all tuning in for right now. We're waiting for people to roll in. I hope you all had a good week. I had a pretty good week. Today was my 980 day, which is always wonderful. I get a whole day to get ready for the stream and do whatever else I'm going to do, which I spent making a lot of videos, making a lot of content for videos. So it's going to be a lot of fun stuff coming up. The chat room's already going off here. Who do we got in the chat? Let's check it out. You got New Zealand. We got Lower Peninsula and Upper Peninsula, Michigan. That's pretty awesome. David says, I have my Baofeng turned on in your honor this evening. Well, thank you very much. Thank you from the Baofeng man. Let's get things turned over here. Bam. How's it going? Let's check those. Get that camera. Mark Kidd, hello, everybody. First time to the live stream, Jonathan says. What's up? Man, we got a lot of people. We got New Jersey and New Zealand. Right on. Don't want to confuse the two. Those are totally different letters. Man, all right. Very cool. Well, so this is the Ham Radio Crash Course. What we try to do every week is just build our knowledge a little bit, what I call moving forward with ham radio, learning things that you can then hopefully apply. And as you apply, you do. The more you do, the more you learn, the more you remember, you're able to get a little bit stronger and a little bit stronger. And then you'll look back, you know, over a couple of months. Carrie, we had on not too long ago. Look how far she's come in a short amount of time. And I always say, you know, there's some kind of homework that I always put out. And so this week, the homework is compile a list of features you would want in an HT radio, right? So, you know, I want APRS, I want DMR, I want System Fusion, or I want different stuff, whatever it is. I want a really good speaker, or I want what's considered a really good mic. And take that list and then go online. You know, you can look up YouTube reviews. You can go to the websites for different companies and see if they've got the features you're looking for. And then search the reviews and see what's good in that area. I've found that once you kind of have a list of what you're looking for, you can find a couple of radios that stand out. And then you can say like, hey, okay, these are something I could use. And then you can, you know, go out there and actually try them out. If you got a store in your area, that's the best way. Or then really hit those reviews. So, man, more people. Tennessee, Eastern Washington. We got some people that got their license. That's awesome. I love that. I love that people are getting their license. Oh, we got Ethan. What's up? Ethan's in the house. I didn't see Zach yet. Is he on? Hope he's on. Ethan, why don't you go ahead and drop a Discord link if you got that. And he's in snowy Flagstaff. Oh, I bet. Yeah, so we are on Facebook. We have the Ham Radio Crash Course on Facebook, and we also do a Discord chat that follows up this live stream, which is a lot of fun. The links are in the description for all those things. And if you haven't already, like we've got a couple people who this is their first time, hit the subscribe button and make sure you click that bell so you know when we go live or whenever I post reviews or whatever else I do. Thank you so much, Ethan, for posting that. Okay, so news. I got a gift, and this is just a fun little thing. Just want to say thank you to Anthony. He sent me a Nintendo Switch case and this really cool battery charger that slaps around the Switch because, you know, you got the kids, and a little gift certificate in there. So I bought them a game, and they're playing with that. So I wanted to say thank you, Anthony, if you're in the chat. Burbs, as he goes on Discord, he's in our Discord. So just wanted to say thank you for that. And W5KUB.com every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern is their chat on, again, Tuesday. And I wasn't on last week. It was a good show, though. I got to check it out. And hopefully I'll be on next week. I was busy. But yeah, that's a lot of fun. You get a lot of really smart people. The last time I was on, the information that was there was really, really good. So FYI. Stickers, people have been showing their pictures of their stickers that they bought from down below. They're huge. They're like super, super big. They crack me up how big they are. They're like as big as my face for the Ham Radio Crash Course. So if you want something that big, check that out. And it is the holiday season, so if you're thinking about buying some gifts or anything like that, I'd appreciate it if you use the Ham Radio Crash Course link, which is in the description. No more cost to you. It's just a little bit of money that comes to us from Amazon and helps the channel out, pays for the services that we do or that I pay for to run the hosting for the other services I need to run the live stream. So FYI. I do have a shout out, and I just found it today, ditdit.fm. It's a podcast specifically about CW. And so I'm about 20 minutes into my first episode, which is their 23rd, I think, episode. And it's pretty good. It was about getting over the anxiety of doing your first CW call, which I'm about that area. You know, I've got a couple CW calls, but it's always a little bit anxious for me being a more of a vocal person to say, no talking, we're going to use CW only. So I found it really good. They actually had a professional on that was talking about, he treats people with anxiety and talked through a really cool number of stuff there. So big shout out on that one. Okay. The Brew Crew. Patrons that are watching that are part of the Brew Crew, I have something pretty special for the holiday season. The Insanely Bad Elf made by the Ridge Ray Vintage Ale Company. They make four or so Bad Elf series. There's the Bad Elf, the Very Bad Elf, the Criminally Bad Elf, and the Insanely Bad Elf. And they go up in the ABV the worse bad they are. So this one is a 11.2 red ale, which is probably the highest thing we've ever had on the stream, aside from maybe what we had when we had Jerry KG6HQD on a couple of months ago. But here we go. Cheers to the Brew Crew. Thank you for supporting the beers there. Oh, DJ Snip says, I thought you were going to say podcast in CW. That's not half a bad idea. That would be kind of funny, actually, to do part of the podcast in only CW so that people would have to go learn. Like, what are they talking about? That's so cool. Oh, man. This is nuts, man. It's clear, and it's 11.2. I'm actually a little scared. I'm just kidding. It's just beer. Fear no beer. Ooh, it's kind of sweet. Huh, interesting. Okay, Ryan Dixon says, you're on, buddy. He says, when you get to Dayton for Hamvention, I can point you to some good brews. By the way, I am going to Dayton Hamvention, so if you are thinking about going, we'll set something up, maybe a meetup or whatnot. That should be a lot of fun. Well, okay, got that out of the way. Upcoming videos, patron picks is going to be next week. I have a feeling which way it's going. If you are a patron that can vote, go check that out. I'm looking for your votes for next week's video. And we have an FT2DR review coming up shortly here, so look forward to that. Hopefully you guys are interested in that. It's been one of my most requested things to talk about, so super awesome. But okay, why are we here? Well, I have always been interested in emergency preparedness. You've probably seen my videos on the topic. You are maybe interested yourself. And I have looked around, and there's mainly two people playing the game in amateur radio, and that's the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, ARES, and then RACES. ARES is put on by the ARRL, and we are fortunate enough to have two people involved in ARES that are active in the Ham Radio Crash Course, and they have graciously decided to come on the show. So let's switch over here. I'm gonna put the interview stuff on. Okay, where is it? There we go. Okay, so we have Evan and Dom. Evan is a county emergency coordinator, and Dom is an assistant coordinator. Are you both there? Can you hear us?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
Okay, so Evan, we were talking a little bit before the chat. Why don't you tell what emergency coordinator means? What does that mean?
Sure. So emergency coordinator is basically someone who oversees all of the amateur radio related interests as far as the emergency communications aspect goes at a county level. So to kind of give you a view of the hierarchy, you have your ARES at the ARRL national level, then you have state coordinators, district coordinators, and then down to the county coordinator like myself.
Okay. And I think you guys were mentioning it before, and I forgot to put it in our questions that we're going to cover. But you were talking about FEMA classes, right? What are those FEMA classes? If anybody wanted to, you can do this on your own, right? Anybody can go take these classes.
Absolutely. So you can actually do a Google search for FEMA and then NIMS, NIMS courses. And there's a self-study electronic learning that you can take. As a part of ARES, it's highly encouraged that you take those. Here, where I'm located at our state level, they have made it very, very much encouraged to where they're going to kind of exclude you from certain activities if it involves state or county government, because they want to make sure that you have an appropriate knowledge level to be able to interact with people in that role.
Okay. Well, that's good to have, and I'm assuming it would be helpful regardless if you're in Aries or not. Like, as somebody who's cert trained, I would assume that would be helpful for me too. So I should probably go look at those.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, it goes over the details of the incident command system, which is how FEMA basically runs a disaster from the top down, so to speak. And you need to be familiar with that to be as effective as possible if you're volunteering your time for communications.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I've got some questions here, and I was hoping that we could approach this from like how we would introduce someone to Aries and kind of give them enough information to determine if they were interested in pursuing it further. So I'll just start from the top and we'll work our way down. And Dom and Evan, you both feel free to jump in anytime you like. So how did you both hear about Aries, and how long after you got licensed did you hear about it, or in relation to?
I heard about it, I think, not too long after I got licensed anyway. I think I wanted to join before I even got officially licensed, when it was all up at the aid or through W5YI all up in the air still. And
okay,
I think I'd wait till I got official to, because do you need a call sign? I think you need a call sign to join.
More or less.
Yeah. I would assume it would probably limit your functionality, right? if you couldn't transmit.
But yeah, I needed to wait to be official. But basically, as soon as I got my like a few weeks after I got my license, I think I signed up for Aries, and that was a year or two ago.
Okay. How about you, Evan?
When I first got licensed, I was 14. So I got my license, started going to our local radio club meetings, and a few people that are active in the club were also very active in Aries. And they kind of nudged me in that direction. It was more like a kind of, hey, we help out with different, charitable groups in the county, and we do safety communications for walkathons, and it's good on the air experience and stuff like that. And it just kind of snowballed over the years that I really enjoyed that involvement. I really enjoyed the whole, preparing for a difficult situation or some kind of emergency, and it kind of parlayed into that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I imagine you guys have standing meetings monthly or whatnot. What's a typical meeting like? What do you guys cover? Is there some kind of order to it and different set parts of the session you go through?
I'll start this one out before Dom gets a chance to throw me under the bus, since I usually run the meetings.
Oh, all right, Dom, take notes and get ready.
The way ours is set up, and some groups have more frequent meetings than us and some have less frequent. We meet quarterly for a regular meeting, and then we have trainings that come up a couple other times throughout the year. We used to do monthly meetings, but there just wasn't enough going on to bring everyone out there. And it kind of gave me more energy and time to focus on putting together a more productive conversation for that meeting. So, we have normal radio club type stuff, new business and old business, updates on where we're at with projects like our go boxes or emergency trailer, that kind of stuff. Updates on planning for public service events, like we do communications for the Susan G. Komen Walk in our area. Updates on that kind of stuff. And then we'll usually have some training of some sort. We've done courses on FEMA-related items. We've done traffic handling courses. We should probably do one of those again. That's one of those things that needs refreshed periodically. But we've also shown videos from the ARRL about actual Aries activations. We've had guest speakers from agencies that we serve, like the Red Cross and emergency management, that kind of stuff.
Oh, great. All right, Dom, where'd he screw up? Did I lose you, Dom? Dom? Are you muted? Uh-oh. We'll keep going. Are you still there, Dom? You all right? I hear him clicking in the background, I thought. Evan, can you hear me? Oh, he dropped.
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, he dropped. Okay, that happens. So Dom, he just kind of finished talking about what's involved with the meeting. I'll twist the question a little bit. What is your favorite part of the meetings? If you didn't hear what Evan said, you can kind of chime in on that.
Favorite part? I mean, definitely like hearing, like learning about how to handle emergencies more, I think. Like, I'm trying to, like, it's hard to describe, just kind of like.
Yeah, I put you on the spot. Thinking, sorry about that.
Say, thinking of ways to use things that you would normally wouldn't think of, like,
mm-hmm.
or like go kits, or makes you think more than just, oh, this probably won't happen, or
sure,
something like that.
Like an aspect of doing, right? You kind of like, okay, hey, no, I have this radio, and this could happen, so what do I do in that situation kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay, right on. So great about the Go Box. It was mentioned a couple of times. What gear did you need as far as gear goes to get started? Did you have to bring your own stuff, or how does that work?
So we, like, our organization, if you want to chime in here too, Evan, we do have some equipment, but that's normally like for, I don't say on site, but like you have to be like on the trail, like in our trailer, or you have to be with someone that has the equipment. But we do have a few things, like we have a 2 Go Boxes, and they have some HF rigs and a 2 meter 70 centimeter in there. And like I said, a trailer that has 2 HF rigs and a few mobile rigs in there.
Okay.
But a lot of it is your own equipment.
Okay. Now, real quick, Evan, before you answer, I am assuming that whatever you guys are talking about is your chapter. That doesn't apply to all chapters, of course. So for anybody listening, that's, of course, we're just talking about their particular area.
Yeah, I can kind of clarify that a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
So Ares groups kind of vary a little bit based on involvement, based on the resources that your county has available and the people that are involved. In a lot of areas, it's, you know, you're bringing your own equipment. You join Ares, you fill out a questionnaire that says, hey, what radios, you know, do you have? Or not so much that, but like what modes can you operate on? What bands can you operate on? You know, that kind of thing. So that way, as an EC, I can kind of look through that and I know, okay, well, Dominic has HF, he has an extra class license, he has the capability to do HF digital, so that I can kind of incorporate that into an emergency scenario that may arise.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you know, we talked about a lot of expensive, complicated stuff here. A very large majority of our communications can be done with a VHF, UHF mobile, a good antenna, and an HT.
Oh, that's good.
While that other stuff is helpful, you know, we're inviting and, you know, wanting everyone involved that wants to be involved. If you've got a radio and you've got a license and you want to be a part of Ares, we have a role for you.
That's great. So I assume it's, if you had more, you could deploy it, but just being able to communicate is probably one of the most important things for you guys, right?
Exactly. The ability to communicate is the irreplaceable part.
Absolutely.
So that's my thought on it.
See, and I did pull up the registration form for, or the generic Ares registration form, so it kind of gives you an idea of.
Oh, that's great.
I would say what we look for, but what's asked, just so we, like Evan said, have a general idea of like, oh, you have access to this, or you're this class, so you, like kind of knowledge level or that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
it's like your ham radio arsenal that you can put down there. Because I notice it's asking yeah. what you can work, like what modes, what bands you can work.
Right.
That's very cool. That's very helpful. Okay, so that's is that a standard form or is that
That's a standardized form. Some counties may have modified versions of that, but that is right from the ARRL Ares website, and everyone that I have seen looks very similar to that.
Okay. Okay, good deal. So now that you've played around with radios a little bit, you probably came to Ares with your own radio. And by the way, this is a question I did not, they don't know about this one, so I'm throwing a curveball at them. Is there anything you started with radio-wise that after using it for a while, you're like, I think there's better options out there, and you change to a different radio? Anything that comes to mind?
I'll take this one first, and I'll give Dom a minute. So my first one, and I don't want to disparage any equipment out there. the particular radio I'm going to mention, I think, has a place. For me personally, my very first HF radio that I bought myself when I started getting back into ham radio after taking a bit of a hiatus for a year or two, was the Yaesu 857.
Okay.
And the fact that it didn't have an automatic tuner, the display was very small and hard to read, the DSP wasn't very good. You know, when I would try and check into nets and things like that, I think people were difficult to copy.
Sure.
You know, I just, after that, I went to a FT450 and eventually a 991. And, you know, I just kind of came to the conclusion that something with good receiver, good filtering, you don't have to spend $1 million on it. But those two things really do end up being helpful for an emergency type situation where you're not working under the best of circumstances.
So just clarification there. So are you using the 891 now for some of your Aerie stuff?
I personally have the 991, not
oh.
the A.
Oh,
the 991.
Right. Okay.
Our radio club has an 857 and a 450 that we use for Aerie's deployments. Personally, if I'm checking into an Aerie's net from my home or on location, I'll bring my own gear.
Okay.
And I'll use the 991 for that in my go box.
Okay. You'll have to show us that picture when you get a moment of your go box. And we don't have to do it now because I'd like you to talk through it a little bit to people. They'll know. So we'll just keep going.
Sure.
And then later we'll do it. Don't let me forget though.
Of course.
So, so you already mentioned the Susan B. Komen, I believe, event. What other events have you worked for either emergency simulations, anything related to Aerie's? What kind of events have you guys done?
Sure. So I'll take the list and then I'll maybe let Dom talk a little bit about the experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the course of a year, the Susan G. Komen race in our area is one that we're very intricately involved with. It is a really good drill, if you want to call it that, for a localized kind of situation. It works out well for that, and we get to help a good cause, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one. And then, unfortunately, a month later, after that event, we do our simulated emergency test.
Okay.
Which is a statewide drill that we participate in at a county level every year.
I'll let Dom go in a second. Can you break down what that simulated emergency is like? Like, what is it, and what are your roles? What do you do?
Yeah. So at the state level, they typically design a very intricate scenario, and they'll have all the Aerie's groups across the state. And then sometimes some civil defense groups as well will play a role in this. And they kind of put the different pieces and parts together. So we'll have local Aerie's groups simulating a scenario. You'll have the national traffic system working in our state to pass health and welfare traffic and pertinent information about the drill. The situation this year, we're in the Midwest. Some of you may have been familiar with the blizzard of 1978, which is a very long time ago, but it was a very disastrous storm that actually was fatal for, I want to say, a few dozen people.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of did a recreation of that in modern times with us providing supporting communications for it. That was the scenario from this year.
As far as information traffic goes, is it mostly phone, mostly voice, or do you do any digital as well?
We did not use digital this time in our county.
Okay.
I did copy some digital bulletins from the state, but we didn't use digital coming out of our county.
Okay.
Most of our stuff was conducted on VHF, UHF, if you want to call it tactical communications at a mm-hmm. local level.
Yep.
And then we maintained an HF liaison to the state so that we could pass, you know, information about our progress and our status here in the county.
Okay. Dom, how about you? You participated in some of the same events. Is there anything you can add to that as far as what you did or what you felt was a learning experience maybe?
So yeah, learning how like the syntax of, hang on, I got some back feedback here. Learning the syntax of all the,
are you getting feedback?
Sorry, I'm getting a little bit of feedback.
Okay.
Learning the syntax of how to talk back onto the nets and the proper format and all that stuff was definitely a learning experience, and like when to talk and how to give reports and that kind of jazz. I know and like I've said, it's mostly voice and phone in our county. I personally like to see a little bit of digital within the county. I don't know how it how that'd be implemented, but like a backbone or something. Do something like how you have the weather facts or the weather APRS stations. Do just some sort of beacon like that
right.
Just give general reports every now and again.
Mm-hmm. I heard that people use WinLink a lot. Some of the Aries people I bumped into at HRO in Anaheim have stopped me and, you know, asked me questions and stuff like that. And they're asking more about running WinLink, particularly from a Go box or a remote location. Have you guys thought about doing anything with that?
I hate WinLink so much.
There is starting to get some focus around that at the state level.
Okay.
I'll be honest, because, you know, we're hobbyists at first. You know, it's sometimes hard to press people into, hey, you know, you don't have any interest in this aspect of the hobby, but could you consider forking about $400 or $500 and, you know, 40 hours of your time
right.
to try and make this all play.
Right.
So it's one of those things that, like, if they decide that it's a very pertinent part of our plan here, you know, mm-hmm. I'll get on board. We do have a statewide digital net every week, so they relay for those of you that are nerds in the FEMA world, you may know of the ICS 213 form, which is very similar to a radiogram.
Yes.
And we'll actually pass those digitally over HF digital. Think of like PSK 31. It's a little bit different mode that we use, but it's a similar concept, and basically your radio spits out that entire message in a proper format on the other side, and we do drill that. And I think that's a very useful tool. To me, I would say it's at least as useful as WinLink, and there's a little bit less setup involved.
So I have heard of people transferring that form via WinLink. Is that a thing they do?
Yeah, WinLink is basically a radio-based email.
Right.
But from what I have looked at, there's a little bit more involved to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have FL Digi and you have a radio and you have an antenna, we've used a couple different ones.
At the end of the day, that form is just like a comma separated valued form, right? Or tab delimited. How does it break down?
Yeah, that's essentially what it boils down to. At least on the FL Digi side,
mm-hmm.
There's a companion program that you download. Actually two of them. There's FL Message and FL Wrap. Basically you run those in conjunction with FL Digi, and when your FL Digi receives it and decodes it, it literally populates it into a normal message form.
Okay.
And then it spits it out as a completed product that you can print out or email or
it's a text parser. It's basically a text parser, right? So it's looking for certain characters to and it's just going one by one down the feed line, basically.
Exactly.
To fill out the form. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm a software engineer, by the way. But
couldn't tell at all.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, you could use just about any digital mode so long as you don't burn up your radio sending out however long that mode takes to spit those characters out. I guess at that point, how reliable the communication could be bad to your radio, because you'd have it keyed up for so long at 100%
exactly.
duty cycle.
Can I do a ping back on the gear thing real quick?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I wanted to bring this up because a lot of times people ask, what kind of gear do I need? We talked on that a bit, but a lot of times people don't think, what kind of antenna do I need?
Oh, great.
And,
yes,
And although, Hosh, your hex beam is an incredible antenna for DXing and making contacts all over the place, it wouldn't necessarily be a good fit for Aerie stuff.
No.
Because you're typically serving your state or your region, and what you would actually want is an NVIS antenna, which mm-hmm. stands for Near Vertical Incident Skywave, and that is basically a low dipole that is designed to cover your state and your region, and we use those pretty extensively in Aerie's. Just to get around our state back and forth when nothing else works.
So be specific for me, what band and then how high off the ground dipole?
Here we use 40 and 80 meters almost exclusively.
Wow, okay. I didn't expect that. I thought you'd be 20, but okay.
I don't know all the mechanics of it, but 40 and 80 typically works, has clearer local communications, especially during the day, because at night the bands go long. So during the day, 40 and 80 is more conducive to statewide stuff.
Interesting. And how high off the ground is that? Because it's just it's a cut dipole, right?
Yeah, you could take a normal 40 or 80 dipole or sure. G5 RV, and optimally you want it between 10 and 15 feet, probably no higher than 20.
Wow. Okay, and everybody gets the idea. The closer it is to the ground, you're sending your RF up, and it's reflecting off the atmosphere, basically.
You got it.
And that's in the technician class license book for anybody that's studying for that right now. Dom, anything on that one?
Take that, Flat Earthers. No,
we're picking a fight now with flat earthers.
No, Invis is great for semi-local comms, like on the state level. Mm-hmm. That's basically what my G5 RV is set up to do as Invis, but doesn't always work like that because I've gotten all the way out to like Wyoming and down to Florida, and I've picked up all over the world on it. But generally speaking, most of your RF is up and down.
Okay. Yeah, the hex beam has no up and down. I only get picked up halfway across the country and further. That's it. I don't have any local comms. All right, so let's see. This is good, because I was going to ask this question, but you already started going into it. So what nets do you work? What do you run? What have you learned from doing the nets? Because I think the meetings are great, but I think when you get right down to it, the net is really where you put the rubber to the road and you learn operating practices. So why don't you tell us a little bit about those?
I'm personally very active in our county net, which is held on 2 meter VHF on our repeater. We do drills on simplex where we'll operate without the repeater, radio to radio, usually a couple times a year, just to see what our coverage looks like in the event the repeater is not usable. And then I do occasionally check in on state traffic nets and state areas nets as well. As far as learning, I mean, I learned how to run a very informal net that was just kind of like a Hamsel known as a rag chew net. You just get on and talk. And I started out running one of those when I was in high school. And that kind of helped prepare me to do more formal nets as I got older and got involved in Aries. And Dom's really picked up on it pretty quick, too. So he may have a little bit more recent thoughts on how that all goes together.
Absolutely. What do you think, Dom?
So to kind of sum it up, just like this, like how I think nets run and that kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, kind of. Okay. So, yeah, I like to think I picked it up pretty quickly. There's not too much to running nets and learning how to do it. It's just, and even still, when you're at a local county level, that you don't have to be too precise. It's always good to practice that, and so you're ready for if something happens, you don't sound like a chooch on the air. But
that's a technical term, actually.
It's a technical term, yeah. Technical. It's like a lid. It's a variation of lid. Yeah.
But it's not super hard. If you do it once or twice and you get, actually, if you run a net once or twice, you'll pick up on it super fast. Like we have a header that we use for our county nets, which is very similar to the one that we use for the ham radio crash course nets. And
which talk group is that? Do we get a shout out for the talk group?
31621.
There you go. 31621 is the ham radio crash course talk group for anybody on DMR. Sorry, go ahead, Dom.
No, you're good. But yeah, it's basically just, it's a lot of, to put it in a way that a lot of people can understand, it's kind of like a government, that's kind of like how Aries as a whole is kind of like a government program is, it's a lot of structure, which for a lot of people, it's a good thing. So it's like, you have this level, you report to this, and that kind of breaks down into nets. Like you have this section, then you have a formal traffic only section, then you go to short time and anyone additional comment, and it's just really structured, so mm-hmm. you know when to check in, you know who goes first and all that.
Yeah, so if you hear someone refer to a net, and that this goes for people that are getting new to ham radio and they're tuning around and listening to stuff, if you hear a net start out with the phrases, this is a directed net,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of what that's referring to, that it's going to follow a very specific structure. And I think that's very needed for Aries type stuff. Honestly, if you listen to a net and it sounds like the person's reading off a script, it's probably safe to assume that it's a directed net. and okay. that you kind of want to adhere to that. Doesn't mean they're not going to welcome other people to check in. It just means expect it to follow a structure. And, you know, it might be good to listen for a little bit before you chime in with your, by clicking the push to talk yourself.
All right. So just so everybody knows, I have illuminated the Q&A number. So if anybody wants to call in, you have three pretty okay amateur operators, I would assume. Two of them are good in Aries. So if you have questions for Aries or just any questions, you can call now. We'll you can call and just sit, just hang on the line. We'll let you in. I got some more questions, though, so we'll keep going with those. We covered antennas. I had a question for that, but you snicked me and took the thunder out of my jar there, so excellent. That's all right. So if you could pick one or two or three, if you've got three good ones, what is the best thing you've learned since being a member of Aries? And possibly think of it, if I wasn't in Aries, I wouldn't have learned this. You still were a ham radio operator, but if it wasn't for Aries, you wouldn't have it. What would you pick? Anybody take a shot at it?
I'll take the first stab here. Being in my position, I think it's taught me a lot of how to manage people and be in a leadership. Well, I don't want to say a leadership position, but a leadership position of sorts, and
sure.
know how to effectively and respectfully like lead people and lead a group and promote, I can't think of the right term, but promote great ideas and problem solve with groups. Mm-hmm. And that's what one of the FEMA courses is teaching me. IC241B, I think this teaches you about groupthink and all that stuff, but how to effectively lead a group of people and, in a sense, a county mm-hmm. of amateurs in Aries. People don't directly come to me, obviously, but just something like that.
Right. Sure.
And you said two things, or people don't directly.
Oh, sorry. I got crosstalk. No, it didn't have to be two things. That's fine. Okay. What do you think, Evan?
Yeah.
I think that was all very valid. I would say that for me, the first thing that kind of occurred to me when I started getting involved in Aries is how effective ham radio is as a last line communication when other stuff doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that, like, yeah, you realize that your radio still works when cell phones and internet doesn't. But when you see how all the systems that have been in operation for 20, 30, 40, 50 years all play together, like the national traffic system, mm-hmm. you start out a radiogram and you hand it to somebody and it just gets there. It's magical. I mean, it takes a few days depending on how far you're sending it.
Right.
But, you know, this is a system that people have been involved with and have orchestrated, you know, over decades, and it works. So I guess, you know, the first thing that I learned was just how well all this stuff works because of how long it's existed. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is it's kind of forced me to get out of my comfort zone as far as what I want to do with the hobby and think about what I can do with the hobby and what I should be doing with the hobby to the benefit of others.
Sure. Well, that's a curious, you mentioned radiogram. Does Aries use radiogram?
At least around here they do.
They do? Wow. Okay.
Yep. So that is the reason that radiograms are used is because it's a structured, repeatable format. The best way I can explain it, if you ever played the game Telephone, like when you were a kid, it prevents the radio version of that because you have a word check. You use, you know, you repeat it back and you make sure that every last detail is copied perfectly. Mm-hmm. So that way that message can change hands, you know, 30 times. And the content is still there in 100% entirety.
Yeah.
And it's a simple and old method, but it's beautiful how it works.
When I was taking the first CW Ops class, the person who was teaching it was a message traffic handler. And how she talked about it was really interesting. And you nailed it. I mean, that's probably the easiest way to approach it is like a telephone system kind of thing. You got a little telephone and you're going back and forth, but it's that character check, the whole check thing that is really empowering, I think, in the system. So yeah,
definitely.
And to kind of add what Evan was saying about using like 20-year-old technology, a lot of, and I kind of see some talk about it in the chat right now too, a lot of people I've seen recently are like, well, why are we using this technology when like a lot of these towers have like backup generators and are fiber and blah, blah, blah. And even if something goes down, everyone uses cell phones on the site anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, generally the people who use cell phones have a, like a hotspot, like not radio hotspot, like a physical CDMA or a GMS hotspot or whatever those are, and are FEMA or federal government people who have come in and not for the average person. And on top of that are resource hungry and like use up tons of battery to make that basically a sat phone call. With radios and ham ops, for example, if we're not super resource hungry and we can get that message out with less resources, like even over APRS, we can put a text message out to a phone or halfway across the country by typing it in on our radio via APRS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like the back end and could be a long haul in the grand scheme if a disaster were to happen.
That's a good point. I hear Jeep Talk Show, or I see Jeep Talk Show talking a lot of trash in the comments. Do you want to call in with your comments there? I'm just kidding. I'm just putting you on the spot.
1v1 me in the stream, bro.
Yeah, knifey knife. Okay, so I have a go back question that I was looking at when we started talking. Evan already showed it before we started the chat, but I think we should go back and look at that go box. And if you want to share that, that'd be awesome. And you can kind of talk through what's in there.
Yeah. Give me one. I still have the image. Give me 1 second to share.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeep Show, if you call in, we'll just hang on. We'll let you know how the system works. You're the one who told me about this chat system. Jeep Talk Show, by the way, while we're waiting, a great podcast if you are a off-roader. I don't know anything about Jeeps, and I listen to that show because it's so interesting. So free shout out there. It's really cool.
I love Jeeps, and I enjoy your talk show.
Yeah, it's really good. The personalities on there is a lot of fun, and I get a lot of information from it because I can apply the same things to my truck, basically. Not, of course, the same, but yeah, get the idea. So I've gotten through almost all of the insanely crazy, insanely bad elf, and it's pretty strong.
Hosh is getting sloppy.
I'll try to keep it together. Go ahead.
So Carl asked about, I'm assuming you said Mars, or did you mean Mary's? Because that is an M in front of Aries. So if you're meaning Mars, I'm not a member of Mars, but I've been looking into it. There's two different types of Mars programs, though. There's Army Mars and Air Force Mars, and Army's Mars. Oh, Aries. I would say being a member, I mean, even myself being in EC isn't really pressuring, or sorry, AEC, and I'm sure Evan, you can chime in. Being in EC isn't super terrible at what, 4 hours a week you have to do stuff.
Yeah, I averaged it out, and I average out about 4 hours a week that I have to spend. But I could always do more. But I mean, the truth of it is, I'm employed full time. I have a little one, but that gets it done. That's enough for me to plan for drills, plan for meetings. I have a report I have to do every month on our activities in the county, and that's enough for me to do it. To be honest, for most of the members, at least where we're at, unless we are doing because we also work with Skywarn, because we're in a severe storm and tornado area that's prone to that during certain times of the year. Unless we're doing a net for that, or we're doing a drill, I mean, there's not a lot that you do as an Aries member. There's a lot that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of like ham radio in general. You can put as much or as little as you want into it.
Interesting. Okay, so I'm going to make a note of that, but we got a caller, so I'm going to let him in right now. Who's on the line?
Hello, does this thing work? Should I mute my radio?
You probably should mute your YouTube if you're listening to me. That's a voice I remember. We got the Jeep Talk Show on the line.
Yeah, you guys may know me as Tony, and I didn't see the conversation steering towards what I was talking about in chat, so I didn't want to mess you up by calling in.
You can mess us up. Why don't you go for it? We can handle it live.
All right. Well, you said that I was talking trash, so let me start off with some trash. Why is it that amateur radio operators that had to pass a Morse code test are better than the ones that didn't?
They're not. Anything else, caller? No, I'm just kidding. I'll pontificate a little bit on it. So that was a barrier to entry at some point. And by and large, everything you've heard so far tonight didn't involve CW at all. Nothing was involved with CW aside from maybe the message traffic that gets passed. CW is probably not as active anymore in emergency comms as it might have been. I don't know that it ever was other than the Telegraph, but that's kind of slow. Mainly everything is phone and digital from my understanding now.
True. No, and I was just giving you a hard time because you were saying I was talking trash and
chat. I was just kidding.
The thing I was talking about.
Yeah.
The thing I was talking about in chat was with technology becoming more robust and less likely to fail on us. I think that we're seeing a time where emergency amateur radio operation is waning, is dropping down. Its importance is not as much as what it used to be. And even if you look at the standpoint of, there's always those situations, people don't understand that the billion-dollar infrastructure that's out there has to be operating for, like, the Zello and all the internet-based communications to work. They don't understand that. What they see is the media focusing on, like, the Cajun Navy when they were down here, and all their communications was Zello. Mm-hmm. As amateur radio operators, we really aren't supposed to be involved physically with the emergency communications. We're just supposed to be communicating it. So I worry about with the media showing all the attention on the flashy folks that are actually, you know, getting their hands dirty with what's going on. There's going to be less of a group of people interested in being amateur radio operators, and especially in the emergency field. So that was kind of my whole point. I think technology is making things worse for amateur radio operators.
So that's interesting. So I come at it from a different point of view. I think that the technology infusing itself with amateur radio has been one of the best things that we've had to really give it a shot in the arm. We've had more interest in it than ever before, I think. And if you get right down to it, the media and their being on site or wherever the disaster is, they're using radio to send out their data, right? I mean, there are no comms for them to tap into. They're using radio vans that are basically radio systems. So the whole thing still requires radio. Radio's not going anywhere. And I think that as technology is always going to improve, are being able to adapt it and bring it in and be able to use it. I mean, just look at what we're able to do with Raspberry Pis and all that stuff. And actually, Evan, spoiler alert, Evan's going to talk a little bit about that. But it's amazing what we can do now and interface it. And I'm not sure. I saw the chat when you were talking to them, Tony, that somebody was talking about the decline of amateur radio. And I think, if I'm not wrong, we're at least keeping pace, if not building a little bit, as far as license holders at this point, which is good, I think. And that's partially for some of the people here in the Ham Radio Crash Course. Your numbers, a lot of people coming out of the Ham Radio Crash Course. And that's a bit younger age group and a bit more technology-friendly group. And I think that's going to be the status quo going forward.
Yeah, and please don't misunderstand my questions. I'm not a gloom and doom person. I do feel amateur radio is very important, and people don't understand that whenever that billion-dollar communications infrastructure goes down, you ain't going to be talking to anybody.
Right.
But I'm just posing the question from the standpoint of, what are we doing as amateur radio operators to make sure that people know about amateur radio? What are we doing to make sure they understand that whenever their cell phone doesn't work, mm-hmm. you're going to basically have a flashlight, because that's all you're going to be able to use it for. Oh, and take snappy pictures for when the internet comes back up.
Well, this is an easy one. Everybody listening, tell all your friends about the Ham Radio Crash Course and that they should come watch all the content. No, but seriously, I mean, there's a wealth nice. There's a wealth of information out there, and really, I've been saying this from the beginning that Elmering is more on the decline than amateur radio operators
sure.
on the decline. Yeah. So to me, that's the bigger problem we have. So the best thing you can do is introduce people to ham radio, introduce people, educate them, and carefully now, educate them on what their misconceptions are about the grid and how communications work they have to be explained. The convenience disappears. Everything that is easy in your life goes away in an emergency situation. And you either prepare for it or you become at the whim of those who have the services that you need or the medical attention. So it's up to you to really look at that. And I think those in the know, people watching right now and whatnot, are best served by telling your friends and family about it, because they're ultimately the ones that are going to depend on you. And if you don't have enough supplies to take care of them or the ability to communicate, then you're going to be strained as well. So you got to drag people along with you as best you can, I think.
Hosh, can I have a quick comment on that?
Absolutely.
And I'll just mention this. There's two things that you need in an emergency situation. You need an amateur radio license and a radio. Well, I'll say three things. And a Jeep. Because Jeep will get you from where from point A to point B.
I second that, and I applaud it.
Real quick comment, Evan, before you take it. I love the stories of where people are using Jeeps to solve problems, help people out. That's awesome. I love the community. I will say this really quick. I've only driven a Jeep once or twice in my life. I was given one when I was in Colorado Springs because it was in the dead of winter and there was snow and ice everywhere. And I got waved to by a ton of people, and I didn't even put two and two together before I got back to the hotel that they were all in Jeeps and they're waving at me. And I'm like, what is going on? What is with these weird people waving at me? Colorado's so friendly. And then I realized they were all Jeep owners. And so I love that community. Jeep wave. Yeah, I love that community. So
that's the Jeep wave.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Tony,
I had a comment on how do people know what amateur radio is and what it can do thing.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
So you talked about how to, you know, evangelize the hobby and what it can do, so to speak. But I want to go a step further than that. And if you don't have an Aries group, you should look into getting one for your county. And then if you have one, or if you're planning to start one, you need to make yourself known to served agencies. Those are the people that where amateur radio is really going to matter. So we have an excellent relationship with our county emergency management director. He's a personal friend of mine that I've made because of my role and his role. You know, interface with those people, talk to people at the Red Cross and other agencies, etc. Because when the stuff does hit the fan, those are the people that are going to end up leaning on you. And that's where amateur radio can really shine. So you need to evangelize and talk to those people and let them know what you can do, in addition to, you know, your aunts and your uncles and cousins, etc.
Excellent. Well, Tony, I got a couple more people here on the call, so I'm going to say thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. And I think you brought a good idea. I think you brought a good discussion. So thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. And go check out the Jeep Talk Show. Good stuff. And I was on there three episodes, and we're going to do another series, another round of it. So I'm very excited. Okay. Why don't you, Evan, why don't you talk through your shack or your go box, and then we'll get to the call. So hang on the line, calls.
Sure. I'll make this quick because you got some people waiting. So this is my personal go box. It does go with me on Aries deployments, which so far have mostly just been drills and for demonstration evangelism of the hobby kind of purposes. Starting at the lower right, I have an FT-991. Ethan likes to give me a hard time because it is an all-in-one. I think, Hosh, you do too. But it is only used for HF. I think I've had it on VHF, UHF maybe twice ever in its lifetime.
So it's an all-in-one, but you got two mobiles sitting right next to it to do VHF,
right,
UHF.
So right.
I'm not against all-in-ones. I believe that eventually you're going to want to get something separate.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And then to the left of that and the upper part, we've got a Yaesu FTM-100. That's my main VHF, UHF radio. I also use it extensively for APRS. Below that, I have a TYT DMR mobile. And then going to the upper part of it, I put stuff up here I don't need to touch as often. And that's why it's at the upper part of the go box. Power supply, automatic antenna tuner, and then, of course, a 7-inch display for Raspberry Pi that I can use to run my ham radio digital programs, logging software, etc.
Ooh, that new beer got me. what operating system are you running for the Raspberry Pi?
It's currently in this photo. It's running Raspbian. I've since switched it to Ubuntu Mate. I like it a lot better that way. It comes with a few more utilities and things pre-installed, and it looks a lot cleaner in my opinion.
Very good, very good. Okay, so we'll take comments or questions on the Go Box as well, but we've got three callers on the line, so we'll go right down the list here. Okay, first person on the line. I think I know who this is. How you doing, caller?
Yeah, it's Shadow /
William. There it is. Shadow Towing's here. What's up?
Not much. I just had a question for the Aries guys. You said you have a very good relationship with your local emergency services. We've run that problem here in our county. Is the county emergency services really don't like the amateur radio guys here. They had just built a new dispatch center, and when the question was brought up to install a ham radio to be able to communicate with the local clubs and stuff, they refused it. And they don't allow, you know, they don't want to work at all with the local amateur community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wondering, have y'all ever seen that, had pushback, you know, stuff like that?
We've gotten pushback from certain folks, absolutely. I don't know how everything operates outside of our county. We actually have an emergency management director, and his entire job is to facilitate emergency situations in the county. So he has to work with the county sheriff, with the mayor, with police and fire. And I have a good relationship with him. So if he goes to the sheriff and says, hey, I think it's a good idea that we incorporate a ham radio antenna at your dispatch facility, you know, the sheriff's going to listen to that. And it's not going to work that way for everybody. But if you have someone that specifically deals with emergencies, go talk to them, because I think they're the ones that are more likely and sympathetic to look at amateur radio in that part of that equation. A lot of times, you know, people that are in leadership positions in law enforcement operate with a very self-sufficient mentality, and they don't really see a use for ham radio. That's my personal experience. I can't say that's universal, but I kind of understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is here. They feel like, you know, I guess they figure the training or experience of, you know, being an actual emergency responder. That was another question I had, but I totally lost it now.
Well, we'll give you that one, because we got a couple more callers, and we're almost approaching.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll turn it over. 7-3, guys. Appreciate the information. Been a very good live stream tonight.
I appreciate you calling. Thank you so much. Oop, don't do that. We almost lost all the callers. Okay, caller, what's up?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
You're on.
Hey, this is Matthew. I'm a new younger here. So what is the difference between Aries versus Aries?
I think he was asking, what's the difference between Aries and Racies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we combined it to where I'm at, so there was one big team that I'm on. Do we do the same thing, or are they different?
Well, let's ask Evan and Dom what they think. So I think the question was, what's the difference between Aries and Racies? Can they be combined? And then what do they do differently? And maybe you can't answer the Racies side. I don't know. If you can't, just go ahead.
I can take that, and maybe I'll let Dom expound a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So Aries is a organization that's affiliated specifically with the ARRL.
Mm-hmm.
Racies has a local civil defense affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a part of a Racies group, you have a local hierarchy that is like in conjunction with a local civil defense group. Racies doesn't really exist in much of our state because there really aren't any civil defense groups in my state. but that's the gist of it. Dom, did you have anything you wanted to add on that?
And specifically, RACES is a FEMA organization, right?
Right. It's a FEMA organization with a local civil defense affiliation.
Okay. Dom?
So I'm taking some of this from the ARRL because I didn't remember which does what, but ARES is activated before, during, and after an emergency and handles the messages between government and like amateur radio. And RACES is basically only during and after the emergency, like immediately after the emergency. And they only communicate if they need support. And it's normally shut down right after the emergency is done. Right. Where ARES is a little bit further after. Like they'll go, for example, like we had a flood last year and we went around to houses and checked up to make sure they didn't have any flood damage for insurance and didn't want to make any claims or didn't need to make any claims because our city has a rampant flood problem and FEMA mm-hmm. doesn't want to intervene unless there's a certain threshold of affected people.
Okay. What's RACES stand for? Are you looking at the, I forget,
Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, I think.
Okay. There we go. Okay.
I'm gonna say yes. I don't remember, but.
Good. I'll take it. 100 points for me. Yeah. Caller, does that answer your question a bit?
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Because I wonder as well on that we combine the two, so our every group is a rescue group. So I think I understand now why we did combine them. And so now, as I'm going up for my stimulus, what should I be booked every or should I take one or the other one? What would your opinion be?
So I think we covered you can't really combine them because one is like FEMA's the government, right? It's a volunteer system for the government, and the other is set up by the ARRL, right? Different entities. You can't really combine them.
The ARRL's official position is that members of ARES are encouraged to also be a member of RACES.
Correct,
so I could see
separate.
It's possible they combined meetings and stuff, but there's going to be some separate functions that you're going to serve as a RACES member from an ARES member too in most areas.
And that might answer the second question. So if ARES is fine with or encouraging people to join RACES, then do both. You don't need to choose one or the other.
See, and to kind of add on to that, RACES is spelled out in Part 97, whereas ARES is not specifically mentioned. However, it's recognized by the FCC at least that we are a thing that exists and we're not interfering with anything, so we're kind of allowed to do what we do, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, caller, thank you for calling in. Go ahead, sorry.
Thank you, because I know there's probably a lot of new technicians like me, people that are getting ready to pass this generation. I think it will help people. And now I kind of see why, at least in my area, why we do have to combine, because I can see that they could work together and support one another. Anyway, God bless. Have a wonderful night.
Well, thank you very much, and congratulations on getting your technician. That's awesome. So get out there and have some fun with radio. Okay.
Yeah. I got mine in 2012.
Oh.
And I've been on the vision for a little while.
Okay. No, yeah, sorry, I heard you mention new technician, so I thought you were including yourself in that one. So, understood. Okay. No. Well, have a nice evening. We're going to move on to the next caller. Thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, caller, go ahead.
Hey, Hosh, it's Cycle Camp. How you doing tonight?
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
Hey, really good. Hey, I'm very much enjoying the chat because I just got involved with my local Aries organization here in Connecticut. So
excellent.
That's really cool. So I have one fairly easy question and one I'm looking for a comment or opinion. The easy question is, all these guys with their go boxes and all that stuff, how do you ensure that your batteries are topped off if you've got to be able to grab that thing and go at any particular point in time? So that's my first question.
So I'll take a little bit if you want to add on to after that here in a second, Evan. Basically, so that kind of comes down to battery chemistry too, and you get a little bit scientific with that. Sealed lead acid batteries lose about or up to 5% of their capacity, like 5% of their charge every month or so. So if you charge it up every or make sure it's topped off every month or every 2 months, you shouldn't be more than 10% of your rated capacity. Lithium polymers and ions don't self-discharge as fast. I can't tell you that number off the top of my head, but I know those last a lot longer. It's more or less just getting a set schedule of making sure they're topped off. So if you do need to do something and go, then you won't be, it's better to have a 10% loss than forget about it. And
well, now I have a follow-on question. So how are you maintaining? Do you have like a monthly process where you trickle charge them, or what do you use? What's the equipment you use?
So currently, I am borrowing Evan's car charger, which I need to return to him to charge the.
Whenever you get around to it.
Yeah.
We need to invest in some for our group, but
I heard Harbor Freight's having a sale on stuff like this.
I would say trickle charger would be a good one to keep around. They're pretty darn cheap, and it's a good way to keep your batteries ready in case of an emergency. Sure.
Say in response to like Dennis and putting them on a smart charger, I would not keep them on a charger 24/7 because that will inevitably decrease the total capacity that they can store.
I agree.
Nickel metal hydrides and nickel cadmium batteries were a huge problem with this. They're not as bad with SLAs and lithium polymers anymore, but all batteries do have a life cycle. LiPos are about or lithium-based batteries are about 300 to 600, depending on a lot of factors, temperature and pressure, a lot of things. But one charge cycle is from 0 to 100%. And say it cuts off at 99 and goes to 100 every 10 minutes, then after 1,000 minutes, if I'm doing my math, I think 1,000 minutes, then that's going to be one charge cycle. And I'm not doing math because it's kind of late for me, but it can burn through them pretty quickly. But I wouldn't keep them on a charger 24/7, but just getting in a strict regimen or every week, every month, every quarter, something that works for you, and make sure their charge is good and top them off.
I do want to mention we do have OH8STN in the chat, and while this is not exactly the same kind of battery necessarily, but he has done a lot of really good videos on batteries, so do check that out. Evan, did you have a comment on batteries?
I was just going to say that personally mine are topped off with solar, so I have that capability as well. It's just one less thing for me to think about.
What kind of panel?
And I know that I'm taking some lifetime off the batteries by keeping them on solar all the time. I'll probably have to replace them more frequently than I otherwise would. But I want to make sure that they're always ready to go. So I have a solar generator that I made with a 100-watt panel that keeps them charged up for me.
What kind of panel?
It's a Renogy. Probably about the most watts you're going to get for the dollar in this day and age. So I applaud them for that.
Was that an Amazon Prime special?
Yes, and unfortunately, Hosh, I bought all that before I found your channel, so I apologize.
Man. Oh yeah, no, I don't care. I don't care. I just if your wherewithal comes up and you think about it, use the link. That's cool. I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no, Renogy makes some excellent stuff. They're all over Amazon. They have good bundles if you're looking to get into that sort of thing. And make sure you use Hosh's link when you do.
I was listening. I was reading the chat. Tyler says an older ham in my area said he keeps his HTs on a charger all the time, and the chargers are plugged into a timer, and each day for an hour, the timers turn on and then shut back off. Anybody have a comment on that?
I actually do that with a 7-day timer for my mom's power chair, and once a week, it comes on for 8 hours, tops off the batteries, and shuts off.
Yeah, that's
what I
do.
That's why I wondered if you guys were doing something similar.
I would wonder, the battery chemistry would be important on that one.
Right.
I have certain feelings on that. It depends on what the chemistry is.
So, yeah, lithiums, again, they don't have as much of a – they don't really have a memory effect, or they definitely have improved in, like, their discharge cycle as opposed to NiCads and nickel metal hydrides of years yonder, but – it does come down to lifespan, and doing it that way will decrease the life, but not as much as keeping them on 24/7. So that's a more happy compromise.
Did we get your second question?
Cool. Yeah. Well, it was really more a matter of an opinion. So FEMA puts out the core four classes on ICS and NIMS, and they're all free. You can take them for free. You can get tested for free, get the certificate for free, all that stuff. So I took my Core 4 classes. I go to my Aries guy, and I say, what's next? He says, oh, you need to take MCOM. MCOM is $50. And I was just wondering why you think that those classes cost so much money. I mean, $50 is not a lot of money, but it's an appreciable chunk of change. And I was just wondering why, if you have an opinion as to why. And I don't know what Skywarn is, but I know the MCOM is, if you take the online course, it's $50 for the course. And I was just wondering what you thought about the cost of the training.
Highway vandalism. Sorry.
I think you're paying the ARRL to put on the training. I believe it's conducted as a live webinar. I have not taken it yet. However, it's on the agenda. I do have a copy of the ARRL's Emergency Communications Handbook that I bought. I have the most recent version that I've read cover to cover, and the majority of the material in that course is also in that book. So I guess it depends on, this kind of boils down to, you know, how much of your time and money do you want to invest in the hobby? I feel pretty confident that in my current role, that based on the training I've previously received and what is available in that book, I feel that I'm at least marginally well prepared to handle certain situations. Although that course you're referring to is something that I would like to do in the future.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys, and have a great evening.
All right. Well, oh, we lost the caller that just was there. Whoever that caller was, Cycle Camp is going to bail, and you can call back in. That's okay.
Okay.
It's all right. We're past our time anyway, so if they don't call back in, it's all right. Cycle Cam, it's good to talk to you, buddy. Take it easy. Well, the other caller bailed, so I guess we can say this is probably a good time to end it. This has been awesome. So, Evan and Dom, thank you so much. Do you have any parting thoughts or any go-backs, maybe notes you made that you wanted to clarify a point or thought? It's okay.
I can't. Say it. Nothing comes to mind.
Okay.
All I can say is that if you've been watching this and you're interested, figure out who to reach out to as far as Aries. You can find it on the ARRL's website and find out who your state coordinator is. And then they can direct you to who's handling your county. So that's the best way to go about getting involved. Or you can ask around at a local radio club meeting if you're already involved. Mm-hmm. But if this sounds like something that you want to be a part of, I'd encourage you to do that.
Well, I think we got that caller back. Oh, Kevin Deadweiler, thank you. Appreciate the dollar. Okay, caller, here you go. Go for it, caller.
Hey.
Hey.
This is Andrew, K-J-O-T. I have a few questions.
Andrew, go for it.
So, now what would you do if you wanted to get involved in something like Racies?
You called into an Aries chat to ask about Racies?
You're going to have to figure out if you even have a Racies chapter or not. Do you know that you have one?
I do not.
Okay. Racies kind of dots the landscape of the U.S. kind of sparingly. There are huge swaths of the U.S. that doesn't even have a Racies group. So while I'm not trying to discourage you from being involved, I'm just saying the Aries is a bit more prevalent. If you have a local civil defense group, which you can talk to your county government about, they may be able to advise you if you have a Racies group.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Andrew, next question.
What about Aries?
Aries, I would say if you go to the ARRL website, find out who your state emergency coordinator is. You know, their email is listed on that website at ARRL.org/Aries. You can go find your state coordinator, reach out to them, and find out who's overseeing the county in which you reside in. And then you can get connected with a group in your county that you can actually be involved with.
Okay.
Got another question, Andrew?
That's it.
Excellent. Well, thanks for calling in. Thanks for watching. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'll also take the links. I'll figure out what the links are, and I'll post them in the description for people that are interested. But it's really only a Google away. If you type in how to join Aries or ARRL Aries, it'll come up, and you can look up your local state coordinator, as Evan already said. Okay. Andrew, anything else before I let you go here?
That'd be it.
What's that?
That'd be it. Okay. Enjoy the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for watching. Take it easy, buddy.
Yeah, bye.
All right. Okay, well, we'll leave it at that, guys. I've got one thing to do here. Evan and Dom, hang on the line. Thank you to all the patrons. The Brew Crew already helped me out with the beers, but we have Michael Nieswender, Chris Ebert, Carrie Blackwell, who is just in the chat, Jason Siebert, David Dansereau, Danny Miller, Franklin Lewis, Brad Snyder, Ben Kellum, Dean Johnson, Kenneth Miyamoto, Andy, Michael Baxter, Colorado Ham, Devin Hedge, Gareth Broadhead, Dennis Dunderdale, Anthony, Justin Blackburn, Garrett Larson, the infamous no name, Dennis Mickelson, George Gaini, Jason Brown, Richard Dragon, KG6WFR, Mark Chase, Corwin Crandall, Ron Thorson, Jay English, who's a new patron. Thank you for that. The Brew Crew, of course. And all these are the people who are voting for next week's patron pick. So if you know any of them, like Carrie on the Facebook group, you maybe can plant an idea in their ear. Any parting words to our interview panel today? Thank you guys so much for being on, by the way.
Oh, you're most welcome. Enjoyed it very much.
Yep.
Okay, well, I believe Evan and Dom are going to leave here right now, and we're going to hop over to Discord. So the link has been posted. It is in the description. James Metz, thanks for the help last week. Oh, absolutely, buddy. Anybody? I will say that I generally try to reply to everybody. So if you send me a message, I try to help you out, and apparently I helped James out. So thank you, buddy. We're going to go over to Discord right now for the voice chat and the text chat. If you're interested in that, the link is in the description. Ethan just posted. Ethan, welcome back to America. Thank you so much for coming back. All right, guys, we're going to leave it at that. Take it easy.